Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, six-time Grammy-nominated jazz singer Nina Freelon and Bobbyette Palmer, production manager of The Clothesline Muse. We're talking about their new show, The Clothesline Muse, which plays Keenan Auditorium this Saturday, and their artistic residency. It's a two-week residency, which is unique, at Williston Middle School in Wilmington, where they're teaching students about the value of the history of elders in the community. They're also helping the students to create an art project that gets installed tomorrow and opens Friday at it's the art gallery of the Arts Council in Wilmington, in downtown Wilmington on Front Street. And if you have a Williston story and would like to share it with us, send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. Nina Freelon, Monday night at the Williston Community Night, this was a night that Williston alumni came together. So many of them had graduated from Williston before 1968, when it was still a segregated school. And this is sort of the golden era of Williston, it seems, because these people, as we've talked about, still have these powerful connections. And there was a lot of talk about what it was like to come up in a segregated school. Mm-hmm. And you seemed to, I don't know if this was planned, but it appeared to be spontaneous. you burst into song, a song from The Clothesline Muse, Separate Your Whites and Colors.
That's right.
Could you
do
a little bit of it for us?
Sure. Mama always told me, you better listen to me, child. Separate your whites and colors. Put each in a separate pile. There's a proper way to do things, and it's always been this way. Separate your whites and colors. It's the order of the day. It's the order. It's the order of the day. When we talk about that metaphor of separating whites and colors in the context of clothing, all minds and hearts are open. Even a sixth grader understands that if you mix colors and whites in the same wash, there's going to be some staining going on. But when we talk about it in the context of segregation, it takes on another tenor altogether. And I use that safe place to talk about something hard. My daddy said to me, separate those whites and colors. It's the way it has to be. Never wash them all together. No dark colors, green or gray. They belong with all the colors on the other side of town. They belong with all the colors on the other side of town. Even a sixth grader knows that's wrong.
And when you present that to these kids at Williston today, kids who were born long after this era ended, although we still, quite frankly, have issues, particularly in this community.
Sure.
But this is a generation that isn't saddled with a lot of that. I don't want to call it baggage. But how do they react when that discussion comes up?
They said in a very, and I don't mean childish, I mean childlike fashion. That's wrong. Ms. Freelon, that's wrong. One kid said, that's racist. Mm-hmm. And I said, how many of y'all feel that's wrong? Hands went up. If something seems wrong, smells wrong, sounds wrong, it's wrong. And I challenged them when they see things wrong in their worlds, because there are things that ain't quite right in 2015, they are to speak up. Because this used to be the law of the land. So somewhere along the line, somebody voted and said this was a good idea. If you disagree, raise your hand and speak up. Because that's what being American really means. You open your mouth and you say when you see something that's wrong. So, and then to sort of look at our guest, Miss Anderson, who's a sweetheart. I wouldn't make any laws that would keep her from drinking out of a water fountain. Would you?
Just to be clear, you're talking about a 78-year-old woman who graduated from Williston.
That's right. That's right. And she talked about the colored water fountain and the first time that she had tasted cool water, when they snuck a little drink out of the white water fountain, and that water was chilled, and the water in the colored water fountain was as hot as it was outside. So she talked about the inequity. She talked about the fact that when there was a fire at Williston and burned part of the school and all of the desks needed to be replaced. Well, when those new desks came in, the students at Williston did not get the new desk. The new desks went to the white school, and the Willistonians got the old desk. Even a young child understood that that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that old saying, and a child shall lead us, maybe we need some leaders who are children in different roles of authority. And I tease them. I'm like, can you all vote? Anybody here vote? Can you drive? Do you have a driver's license? It's like, well, you know, they're not giving you young people too much power, are they?
Is that what you mean when you, the other night, Monday night, you were talking to the Williston alumni and you said, we're stirring up trouble here in Williston. What do you mean by that? What kind of trouble are you stirring up?
The best kind of trouble is inquiry. We discourage inquiry in school. And when a child raises his or her hand and says why, we're like, stop it. You know, you're messing up the flow. We're on a schedule here. Inquiry is the mother of every great innovation we know. We should be encouraging the question why. All of us should be curious. The curiosity is being squeezed out of our children. Creativity is being squeezed. Yet, this is the age of innovation. This is the age of information. Our grandparents lived a handmade life. These children are living a life based on their head and their heart and their imagination. If we squeeze that out of them, we have nothing left.
You've talked about the dangers of teaching to the test.
Oh,
and
yes.
What you're doing at Williston, this residency, is a form of arts integration. And we've actually talked about that before on this show and what that does for kids. But can you just, for people who don't know what arts integration in education means, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Arts integration engages the entire child. As opposed to teaching U.S. history based on dates and facts, and asking for the part of the brain, the very small part of the brain that's involved in memorization, we actually bring history to life. We bring whole child education. And I guarantee you, these children will be able to give you, the children that have been through this residency will be able to tell you all about this subject area because they have been engaged. They have been challenged to use their higher thinking skills to figure out, well, gee, what did segregation really mean? They wouldn't have to go to that very small real estate in their brain that has to do with memorization. They would have more, I mean, brain science backs us up, that there are more brain cells firing when you engage the whole child. And I have a theory that when we teach from the neck up, we ignore, you know, 80% of the physical body. So the children need to move with the material. They need to dance with the material. They need to sing the material. We need to engage all of the senses when we are teaching. And it doesn't have to take away from core curriculum areas. The most underutilized resource in American public education are our art teachers. Why isn't the science teacher speaking to the art teacher? When we're building pyramids in art class, why aren't we connecting with the math teacher to get the geometry and the mathematics that it's involved in that creation? It's ridiculous, especially when you look at the world of innovation and invention that involves breaking down these artificial barriers of knowledge and these glass houses that say geometry is here, physical sciences are here, natural sciences are here, language arts are here, and the two shall never meet.
And when you're talking about arts and, say, science, we've heard educators say one of the ways that you can do that is by teaching kids a dance of the amoeba.
And
that way they're internalizing in their bodies.
Absolutely.
What actually the science, and so it's much easier for them to
learn. I think people are afraid that it looks too much like fun. But this is my feeling. When the school bell rings and the kids rush out into the cool air and they are full of energy and you're exhausted, there's something wrong with that. They should be exhausted and you should be, you know, you as the teacher should be, you know, because we're doing too much for them.
Yeah. We have just about a minute or so left in the show, and I heard a rumor from our resident jazz expert, George Scheibner, that you have a really interesting story about getting a record contract with Columbia. A little off topic, but I hear it's a great story. Can you tell me about that quickly?
George Butler, the person who eventually signed me to Columbia Records, I waited outside of his hotel room for about 3 hours until I could get an audience with him. And then I burst into song. I sang a song in the lobby with many people standing around.
You tend to do that.
Yes, I do tend to burst in. But at that time, I was shy. It's hard to believe. But I used to be shy. No more.
And so you burst into song in the hotel lobby and got a record contract.
That got me his ear. You know, it took... I have to say, God help me with that, because I don't think I don't suggest that as necessarily the way to do it, but it really worked for me.
It worked for you. 6-time Grammy nominated jazz singer Nina Freelon. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel.
Bobbyette Palmer, production manager with Clothesline Muse. Thanks for being here today. Clothesline Muse is at UNCW's Keenan Auditorium this Saturday night, March 28th. Visit our website for more information at whqr.org. That's this edition of Coastline. Tune in next week when we talk with local gardening experts about what grows well here and what to plant now. That's next Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.